We present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with an advertisement from the Burton Mail, read by Brian Perkins.
Elson Chemical Toilet, £8, little used, mainly for defrosting turkey.
How appropriate. Let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Ian Hislop. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Andy Hamilton. Before we start round one, here's a cutting from the Bath Evening Chronicle, sent in by Mrs. Jane Sawyers of Bath.
Hancock, 28, of Bath, was conditionally discharged for 2 years under the Health and Safety Act for failing to report that he had fallen out of a tree and failing to comply with an order that he must not work in a tree.
Richard, who took offence at the off-licence and got it off-air?
I think I can answer this one, Barry. It's quite amazing. No, it's a reference to our old friend Norma Lamont, who is the subject of rude jokes in a TV commercial featuring former Chancellor Dennis Healy, who made a funny face outside Thresher's wine shop.
That's right.
And Lamont, who said he had a good sense, as good a sense of humour as anyone else, didn't see the joke. And complained about it. Anyway, it was nice to be reminded of the entertaining story of the Thresher's wine shop and Mr. Onanuga and so forth.
Yes,
all came up again.
It did, yes.
There's another picture of Mr. Onanuga in the paper again today. Yeah. He was the proprietor of Thresher's. Do you remember him? Who didn't sell cheap cigarettes and booze to Norman Lamont, obviously, because Lamont wasn't there.
He was never there, and he suffered enough.
Anyway, the ban means that we're not allowed to repeat the dreadful slur that Mr. Lamont bought champagne and cigarettes in an off-licence, but what we can say is that he completely destroyed the economy, kept 3.5 million people unemployed, and cost the country several hundred billion quid by pulling out of the ERM at the wrong time. But Mr. Healy is rumoured to be getting his own back. He's suing for copyright infringement of his eyebrows. Ian, where was Dougie heard to be dug in?
Brussels.
Right. And we move smartly on now.
Oh, this is a fascinating story about the change in voting due to the entry of 4 more countries to the EC, taking it up from 12 to 16. And obviously, you need more countries, therefore, to block any specific proposal. Douglas Hurd wants Britain, essentially, to keep its veto, except he doesn't necessarily, if there's a compromise on offer, and he doesn't want to upset the right-wingers in the party, so it's all going to be a huge amount of fudge.
That's it. You've got your points.
In future, it's, you know, they're going to take it to penalties. They'll get a quick result and just get it out of the way that way.
These are the Euro talks in Brussels concerning the change in voting requirements with the entry of 4 new member states. Britain's negotiator, Douglas Hurd, had such a stressful time, his hair went black overnight. Andy, how is a gender agenda causing a design row?
Is this the debate as to whether people should be allowed to decide what sex their baby should be?
Yes, it is.
And I can't remember. Have the government decided anything? I know they're all out there experimenting in this area.
No. It's all about...
It's very fascinating, Andy, because it's all about the speed at which sperm swim.
Yes.
But they put them in a jar and the male ones swim faster. And when they get to the top, they're sort of skimmed off by a professional clinician.
Yeah.
Who then very engagingly takes a bicycle pump and fires them into the spouse of your choice. But if you want girls, you get the one at the bottom. There's a sort of stopcock on this jar, and this slow ones. It's all tremendously scientific. And what he said in the Telegraph, they've done all these tests, and it's no more accurate than random. So it means that people who run these clinics are making a packet for doing nothing. So the government must have endorsed it.
I never knew you were medically trained. That's amazing.
Only in sperm. It's always been a side line of mine. I can always turn my hand to it. I'd like a piece of music now, if it's all right.
All right, I'll give you one. Something I'm sorry, it. I don't mean that. I don't mean that. Alan, will you listen to this?
I'll return, bringing you all the love your heart can hold. Please say, see, see, say you and your Spanish eyes will wait for me.
Oh, that's Sid Vicious. What a win.
Well, very close. It was Al Martino singing Spanish Eyes, of course. And your question is, how did a £175,000 sale result in no commission?
Her name is Bienvenida, which means welcome. Where she has it tattooed, I have no idea.
So you usually have it on the mat.
I think she's had it practically everywhere, but no way.
Well, I think that's the top and bottom of that one. We have this... we had this chief of staff, this man who was going to keep the bridge between us and the alien world. But he won't be there all the time because he has this... is he chief of the Imperial General Staff?
Not now he isn't. Anymore?
No. And he's a soldier. He's got something in his knapsack that all privates have as well, and he's been using it indiscreetly.
Actually, I've had an affair with her. And, for the right price, I might be prepared to reveal the details. But, she rings up, leave me alone, bienvenido. Anyway, so, if there's anyone out there from Fleet Street.
20p. It's on the table. As is Miss...
This is... It's Marshal of the Air Force, Sir Peter Harding, who resigned after doing a bit of debriefing. The Chief of Defence Staff gave up his strategic role and his job with the MOD following the revelation of an affair with one Lady Bienvenida Buck, the former wife of a Tory minister and handy piece of rhyming slang. Handy on those occasions when you need something to rhyme with Bienvenida. Now, the scores at the end of the first round are, as tradition has it, 4-4. Well done, gentlemen. We start round two with a snippet from The Times.
Thousands of new and second-hand bras have been sent to the Salvation Army's bra bank in southern England for dispatch to women in developing countries.
Thank you, Rachel Loke of Leicester, for sending us that. Richard, who swears by a Chinese brush-up?
Somebody called Mr. Wong. By the
way,
isn't it? Richard's favourite person.
Of course it is. He does impersonations of it.
Yes. Yes. Prince Charles.
Another Chinese story. Oh, I know this story. I do know this story.
Come on, then.
I was entirely Wong when I read that. All right, Charles has made a lot of speeches this week, and one of them was about how we should adopt the French system of education and all become grande école.
Yeah.
And the other one was about how we should all learn Chinese in order to do business with the Chinese. Because we're very good at doing business with unpleasant third world regimes, so why exclude China? Seemed to be his line.
Yes, this is all about Prince Charles, who urged the British to try harder with foreign languages and to brush up on their spoken English. Charles extolled the virtues of learning Chinese and Japanese, a philosophy passed down from Prince Philip, who believes Eastern fluency is good for business, and even better for insulting the little blighters. Ian, having done brilliantly there, tried this. Who lost her bite at the dentist?
The vampire story, is it?
Yes. Well, not exactly.
It's Edwina Curry, is it?
No. Even worse than that.
Mrs. Thatcher?
Yes.
Ah! The undead. Mrs. Well, Thatcher had her teeth done.
That's right.
Yes.
Good guess.
It's a good guess.
All the better to bite you with.
After eating too many cabinet ministers.
Isn't it that she says that the dentist betrayed her? and
stabbed her in the gum.
Yeah.
It's funny because she accused Major of being at the dentist, didn't she?
Well, he was at the dentist, having his wisdom teeth put in. This is the revelation that Lady Thatcher's downfall was caused by her teeth. Yes, they were in the mouth of a power-mad despot. The magazine Dental Practice claims her powers started to wane in 1983 when she went to the dentist to have her teeth altered and failed to get back to Downing Street before sunrise. By 1993, she had only five upper teeth, which could explain her famous saying, "The lady's not for gurning." Andy, here's a piece of music for you.
I got your picture, I'd like a million of your aura myself. I want a doctor to take a picture, so I can look at you from inside as well. He kept me turning up and turning down, I'm turning in, I'm turning red, I'm turning Japanese, I think I'm turning Japanese, I better think so.
Question is, what ice queen is grappling with a million yen offer?
Oh, yes. Now, I do know this. Now, Tonya Harding, that great sportswoman, received an offer sort of by phone or fax from a Japanese sumo wrestling promoter who said that she would make a great sumo female wrestler, especially if she brought the crowbar. And as I understand it, she's probably considering the offer now because, of course, she's had a skater's license taken away.
Isn't she a bit thin, a sumo wrestler?
I think it was the aggression factor that they thought might...
You can't be very fat and be an ice skater, really, can you? Go through.
Well, they could feed her hormones or something, couldn't they, and build her up a bit, yeah. You know. Maybe she could sumo wrestle on skates. That would sort of be a great leap forward for the sport, wouldn't it? Channel forward by that, I'm sure.
Anyway, you're quite right, Andy. It's all about shy and demure Tonya Harding, as she's known to compulsive liars. Who has been offered $2 million to become a professional wrestler in Japan? The chairman of the Japanese Women's Wrestling Association claims nothing would give him more pleasure than the sight of the svelte young athlete stepping into a pair of knee-length leather boots. Spoken like a member of the British Cabinet. How about Alan? Your question. Who has proved that beauty is more than skin deep?
Yes, well, I mean, it's people with computers who have nothing better to do. There's been an attempt to analyse beauty. And the conclusion they've arrived at, as far as I could see, because I had three pictures in the paper, is that a woman who is better looking than average is likely to be more beautiful. And one who is less good looking is not nearly as beautiful as the one in the middle. And complete wipeout as far as the one at the end's concerned. And it's all to do with evolution. Because the one on the left, I didn't particularly fancy, but the one on the left has larger eyes to attract the most aggressive males.
Why?
I don't know, but the computer didn't
say. I don't fancy owls.
Some
you
people
know what
do.
You're missing, I tell you.
Women with big eyes produce better babies, it said, this computer said. And that's why it's described them in this way.
Its research into female beauty conducted at the University of St. Andrews, the patron saint of liver salts. An expert in computer graphics was employed to create an on-screen composite image of the perfect female face. Unfortunately, he's left his wife and run off with an IBM 360. And at the end of round two, the scores are still dramatically 8-all. Richard. Who plans to roll up the Iron Curtain and sing for Europe?
It's to do with Douglas Hurd trying to limit the amount of countries
that can enter the Eurovision Song Contest. We have a veto over Norway, do we?
Because he wants us to go on winning as often as we have in the past. And he thinks that if...
twice. We haven't won since congratulations, have we?
I know, but that was a great day for Britain and we hope to be repeated. But if more and more countries are admitted into the Eurovision Song Contest, this could spell disaster for Britain. Hence Mr. Hurd's patriotic moves. Front.
Well, I'd buy that.
Well, I'll offer it
Romania.
To... Well, no, I'll offer Russia, it to the other side.
Russia is just joining Eurovision Song Contest. It's really rather wonderful.
It is. It's Russia's first Eurovision Song Contest entry since swinging Joe Stalin's toe-tapping chart topper, Gulag a Ding Dong. The Russian entry, sung by Judith, is a smoochy ballad. You know the kind of thing, a girl, a boy, a cooperative tractor workshop. Such is Russian Eurovision excitement, they've already named a street in Judith's honour. So, if you're ever in Moscow, be sure to take a stroll down Nolpoinsky Avenue. Now, we move on to you, Andy, now, and say, what lasted just 142 seconds?
Know what I mean, Andy?
That was spooky. That was like he walked into the room there. This was Frank Bruno, who beat what looked like a flesh-coloured wardrobe to a pulp. Frank's not listening to this, by the way, is he? But in 142 seconds. And rather movingly, I thought afterwards, Harry Carpenter, not known for his acerbic questioning, put the theory to Frank that the opponent was something of a bum, and poor old Frank, not used to Harry being, you know, so waspish, got quite upset, which I thought was quite sad. I thought it was like watching a marriage break up. But anyway, and his name was Jesse, which the tabloid headline writers were very pleased about, and he said he was in good condition. As am I. Having seen him, I now think I'm in the peak of physical condition.
His next opponent's called Mr. Big Girl's Blouse.
I hope he can take a joke, though, because...
So do I, matey.
He just hit him behind the head, though.
What?
Well, yeah, I think just hit him is a little bit misleading. I think we were talking about a relative... I just imagine it hurts quite a bit when he just hits you behind the head. But no, if you're a boxer, you should be able to take a few of those, I suppose. Certainly when I was a professional boxer, I could take, I could take a lot of punishment.
At what weight did you fight?
Paperweight.
Alan, who wants to be put in the picture by making an impact, lovey?
I hope it was going to be that Wren who was bitten in the bum on The Invincible. No, this is about the British film industry.
It is.
And there were a lot of pictures of Bob Hoskins and Michael Caine and other juvenile leads with their arms around one another, urging John Major, who is very serious about the arts and about movies and all those sorts of things, to get the government behind a thing called IMPACT, which is an acronym.
And what impact has this had?
Well, they're going to want to make films that make money. This is their great plan. They don't want to make art movies anymore. They want to make Peter Greenaway stuff. They want to make blockbusters, things that bust your block. They haven't got a hope in hell, because none of them can act their way out of a paper bag. The Frank Bruno of the screen profession. They want the government to get... They want money from me, basically. That's what it amounts. They want money from me to make to go off and ponce around in Spain making big epics about pulling guns across...
Did you get turned down for a film part this week? You're very bitter about it all.
Thrown out by a wren, if you want to...
But your bum's healing nicely, Alan. This is the appeal of Impact, launched by Britain's greatest actors and Michael Caine, to gain tax benefits... to gain tax benefits with the British film industry, or as it's known these days, Kenny and Emma. Among these celebrities who turned out were Jeremy Irons, actor and handy Coronation Street stage direction, Bob Hoskins, star of Roger Rabbit... And that's not a stage direction, by the way. Or even an invitation. And Helen Mirren, who created the sensation by managing to stand in front of a camera for a full 5 minutes without taking her clothes off. And the scores at the end of round three are fascinating. No, they're not. Because Richard Ingrams and Ian Hislop have 10, but Alan Corran and Andy Hamilton have 13. Richard, here's a piece of music for you.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in.
That was, of course, Piggies by the Beatles. Your question is, what's causing a swine of a problem in the Garden of England?
It's something to do with John Selwyn Gunner.
And I knew you'd fall for that. I just wrote it on the bit of paper.
He's trying to humiliate me. It's to do with an outbreak of mad pig disease.
Come on, try harder.
I'm trying desperately hard.
Oh, it's been an awful... Even I know this.
Well, tell me what it's about.
I'm going to ask Andy Hamilton to tell us.
It is to do with John Gummer, because it's wild boars.
Wild boars?
It's wild boars running around the fields of Kent.
Two of them have escaped, and they've ratted, and they produced 16 boars. And the RSPCA is discouraging people from killing them because they're very sentimental about these, and they want hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these wild boars.
Yes, quiet.
And you can't kill them.
There'll be a British Rail excuse soon, though, won't they? I mean, it'll be boars on the line, and Bexley, you know, I think...
Wrong type of boars.
A marksman has been hired to shoot the boars before they get on their breeding cycles. Otherwise, he'll have to chase them on his breeding motorbike. Bob Hoskins, eat your heart out. Speaking of wild boars, here's a cutting from the Kent Messenger.
Repairs to Jarus Jackson's G-Reg Mitsubishi Gallant cost £2,000 after a boar ran out in front of her near Tenterden. Mrs. Jackson said the engine was pushed back 9 inches by the impact. The animal didn't suffer. A car coming up behind ran over its head and killed it.
Well, thank you, Jay Cross of Headcorn, for sending us that. Ian, whose mid-flight cash crisis provided fuel for thought?
Don't write Gummer down, Richard. Someone on a plane.
The pilot.
Right. I guess from that clue that it was the pilot. He ran out of money.
Yeah. Well, he didn't have any money. He was Air Zimbabwe. They're all very strapped for cash. Anyway, he was peddling this plane to Marseille. And when he landed, they wanted money. You know, the French. They said... You can't take off again unless you've got some money. So he stomped into the cabin and said, has anybody got an American Express card? Which, indeed, an American person had. And gave it to the French, and the French let him fly out again.
Exactly right. Lovely story. You get a bonus for that. It's a good story. This is the pilot of a diverted Air Zimbabwe airliner who asked his passengers to raise £2,000 for fuel, an evening paper and a packet of opal fruits. Luckily, an onboard businessman put the lot on his expense account. Not only is aviation fuel cheaper than airline wine, it tastes a lot better too. On arrival at Gatwick, the man was presented with a cheque for the fuel along with 5,000 tumblers, 300 barbecue sets... a CD of hits of the 70s. Andy, why was the whistle blown on a game of no halves?
Alan's writing something misleading on my pad here.
I'll tell him. There were these two football teams playing in a dark league.
Yeah.
One was called Talbot, the other one was called Stormwood or something. They're both hotels. Stormwood turned up and he had six players. And they said, I tell you what, you can win. So Talbot won 1-0. However, they got a bit excited. I like this story because I've been telling lies in newspapers all my life. And when the Stormwood, if that's what they were called, bloke got home, he wrote up the story for the local paper, saying Talbot played a blinder, went out to watch it in midfield,
and
wonderful goal.
The goal.
Yeah, did all that. And they blew the whistle on them, and the ref got very upset. And they're all in trouble. It better be that story. Be the Loch Ness Monster.
No. You're absolutely right. In every particular, it's the football match that never was. The ruse went too far when a match report was sent to the Scarborough Evening News. It was so realistic that one player took a week off work after reading how he'd strained his groin in the 84th minute. Alan, the one you've been waiting for. What looks to have been a monster wind-up?
Oh, it's a wren with the teeth in her bum, I know. Oh. Yes. Well, it's more lies in newspapers. There's that wonderful picture we've all had about the Loch Ness Monster and people spent millions trying to find it because it looks like this monster. But in fact, it was bought for two bob in Woolworths. It's a clockwork rubber duck. And it was actually photographed, I think, in this man's bath. Either that or Sir Pete... No, it's...
Oh, no.
That would never stand up in court. And it's the Loch Ness Monster. He took these fake photographs of it, and I'm sure he had something to do with the Loch Ness Tourist Board. And ever since, people have been going there to see this thing, but it was a Woolworths toy.
Absolutely right. This was the news that the Loch Ness Monster may be a hoax. The most famous 1934 picture of the beast turned out to be of a plastic head stuck on a clockwork submarine. Inverness police are keen to interview Salvador Dali.
The Scottish Tourist Board is worried by the news, as Loch Ness is one of their biggest attractions. Apparently thousands go every weekend to stand about watching while nothing happens, mostly visiting Chelsea fans who find it helps them feel at home.
Oh, dear, that can't stay in. Sorry.
All right, I'll say...
How can I show my face there again? No. Suggesting they're dull is completely inaccurate, yes. It's a fact.
On that cheery note, we reveal the final scores, but before we do that, let's see what cuttings the team have brought along. Richard, have you got something to cheer us up?
It's something from my own local paper, funnily enough, the Newbury Weekly News. Mysteriously headed Woolly Jumper. It says, schoolboys who alerted a traffic warden to a body floating in the Kennington Avon Canal led worried police officers to a bag of stolen property and a dead sheep. The bag contained clothes and tools stolen recently. Police have not yet identified the drowned sheep.
Thank you. Ian?
This is from the Reading Evening Post. It says, notorious killer Ronnie Cray was caught throttling a fellow patient in a Broadmoor ward, it's been claimed. Staff had to drag the former gangster off struggling victim Lee Kiernander, according to a source. The source said it was most out of character for Cray to act violently towards another person.
Great. Andy?
Well, for this, I'm indebted to Ian Park from Ipswich. Detectives will be based at Thatcham Police Station from next week in a bid to boost the battle against crime in the area. On Monday, Detective Constables Neville Appley and Alan Gibson will move from Newbury CID to Thatcham and will be responsible for the serious crimes that occur in the area. Until now, detectives in Newbury have been responsible for the crime. But this has proved too remote on occasion.
Very good. Alan?
Well, I had one, but as I was leaving, I glanced at today's Telegraph and found one I brought for Richard. I mean, as one Beachcomber fan to another. Which says that Lord Munchwell, a Labour peer, was jailed for 14 weeks yesterday for attacking a psychotherapist with an adjustable spanner. I don't know why, it's just came up before a couple character. I mean, it's the word adjustable, really.
Well, thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores, and they are quite interesting, but not to Richard and Ian, who've scored 10, but to Alan and Andy, who have scored a magnificent 19. Well played. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Aberdeen Press and Journal, sent in by Sheila Mackey.
Ireland manager Jack Charlton laughed off fears about his health yesterday. I might have been overdoing it a bit, he said, and I've been having trouble with my ears for ages. I had them checked at a Dublin clinic and the doctors gave me a brain scan at the same time. There was nothing in it.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Coron, Ian Hislop and Andy Hamilton. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Alad Evans.